This is side number two of the first tape. I'll continue with Mr. Wolk's interview for the University of Pittsburgh. But Mr. Martin made a speech shortly after they had accomplished something. He said, quote, smoke control called key to city progress, more important than low taxes, dot, dot. The many other facts of the Pittsburgh Improvement Program probably would not have taken place without smoke control. It is reasonably certain there would have been no Gateway Center project, no United States Steel Mellon Building, no Alcoa Building, and many other improvements had there been no smoke control. Quote. Now, how did I get into this thing? We discovered we could get money from the federal government if we used some of our money, and Mayor Scully wanted a big program. One of the things that I emphasized was the old Wilmot Street Bridge. It's called the Anderson Bridge, but nobody knows it by that name. It leads from the Boulevard of the Allies into Schenley Park, and the roadway going all the way. It's one of the most wonderful improvements. Well, I was the first one to really go to town advocating it, although it had been discussed by others. So when we finally did have this big program of public works, it gave the city over $50 million of improvements at a cost of $8 million, and one of the things was this bridge and roadway in Schenley Park. So when the bridge was finished in 1940, I was given the honor of dedicating it. When driving down to the Boulevard of the Allies, I saw these light poles. They were filthy, and it was a shame. So I had them all repainted so that when you went from downtown out the Boulevard of the Allies out to Schenley Park, it was beautiful. Everything was as clean as could be. But in about 3 months or so, they were dirty again, and that's when it occurred to me what the problem was. And that was, we were the Smoky City. And that became an obsession with me. I spoke about it in City Council. I got such a terrible reception from three members of City Council, Eddie Leonard, Joe McArdle, and Tom Gallagher. Eddie Leonard said, quote, you're going to drive industry out of town. We like to see smoke. It means prosperity, quote. And one of them said, quote, you're taking the bread out of the miners' mouths if you have smoke control, quote. And a politician who was friendly to me said, since 1941 was an election year, quote, you'll never get elected again. Don't you know the poor people, they don't want smoke control. It's going to cost them more money, quote. Now I'm going to give credit to a woman who's dead. Mrs. Enoch Rao was the first woman who ever had a cabinet post in the city of Pittsburgh. She was a Republican. She called me up on the phone. I was friendly with her son, Richard Rao. But I don't think I had ever spoken 10 words to her before that time. She called me up as though she were my mother, pleading with me, saying that she had read the story in the newspaper. She said that was the most wonderful thing any man could ever do with the city of Pittsburgh to get rid of the smoke. She said, please, because of what appeared in the newspaper, don't get discouraged about it. I'm frank to tell you I'm an ordinary human being. I might have gotten discouraged, I don't know. But she pleaded with me and I said, quote, Mrs. Rao, I'll make a promise to you. After this talk with you, I'll not give up the fight. I'll fight it to the end and I hope I'll be successful. You have my promise, quote. So we made a trip to St. Louis. Mayor Scully appointed me chairman of a commission of 9. I have to mention one of the 9, Ed Leach, L-E-E-C-H, the publisher of the Pittsburgh Press. There were 3 papers at that time, the Post-Gazette, the Press, and the Sun-Telegraph. All the councilmen went to St. Louis, and on the way back, one man from the Sun-Telegraph said to me, quote, I'll make a prediction that you'll never get an ordinance passed, quote. The Sun-Telegraph was lukewarm about the whole situation. I didn't know how lukewarm they were until years later when a reporter told me he was appointed to find out whether he could get anything on me. that maybe I was interested in stokers or something like that. He told me he had examined everything he could find about me, but he couldn't get anything on me at all. I was as clean as a pin. He told me that story in 53, and if I had known that years earlier when it happened, I would have been worried sick that someone was investigating me. Anyway, that's how I got started, and I was chairman, and I worked my head off. I researched, I went wherever I could go. I gave up all my free time for 7 months in getting this smoke ordinance adopted. And Kurtzman and Robin both were very much interested, and whenever I asked them to do something, they did it. Mayor Scully was for it 100%, and Dave Lawrence never said a word to me against it, and he, in my book, was the tops. Anyway, on June 16th, I introduced the ordinance in City Council. I got downtown and picked up a newspaper. I got the Sun Telegraph. I always looked at the editorial page first. I saw an editorial that it was Mrs. Rao's birthday. I went upstairs and got a copy of the report and the ordinance, and that was the only time we had an ordinance prepared in advance. And I went to her house, and a butler came to the door and said, "Oh, you can't see Mrs. Rao. She's got nurses around the clock." I had had only one conversation with her by phone, but I wrote on an envelope containing the ordinance, reminding her of it, and telling her I was giving her credit for not making me discouraged. So I asked the butler to give it to her. The next morning, this woman with nurses around the clock sent me a long telegram. It was a telegram congratulating me. Mr. Walters asks, what were some of the major obstacles you faced in passing the smoke control and how were they resolved? And Mr. Wolk replies, the railroads were opposed to it. The miners' organizations originally were opposed to it. I had to work very diplomatically with both. I appealed to them. I want to show you how I could look into the future. I said, I'm not against coal. I want coal to be mined. The coal has so much value in it, but it's all being wasted in the atmosphere. I said, research ought to be done to get gas. Look how much ahead of the times I was. They're talking about it now, getting gas and gasoline out of that lump of coal, and you can make disco. I got the coal people to go along, and they did set up a pilot plant. Apparently nothing has come out of it, but now I understand they are going into it more seriously at Consolidated Coal. I had real opposition from Eddie Leonard in council. He represented the poor people who would have to spend money. He was friendly with me, too. I said, quote, Eddie, these poor people, these poor women, have to do all this work alone. They're getting filthy from the dirty city we live in, quote. There were days when you would drive up Forbes Street and you couldn't see in front of you. It was so dark. You had to drive your car so slowly because it was dark at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Anyway, it came into council, and the only opposition was Eddie Leonard. One other man wasn't enthused about it, but he voted for it. It went into effect only on a very limited basis on account of the war coming along. Here is a biographical sketch. They honored me at one of the performances of the Civic Light Opera at the arena. I'll recollect some of the other things, but I want to give you this now. It tells of the smoke control. Ed Leach, who was a member of my first commission on smoke, was a great help in the Pittsburgh press. The Post-Gazette was for it, too. But it would never have passed if I hadn't had the support of Ed Leach and the Pittsburgh press. They would put stories on the front page. Here also is a letter about me that my friend Cy Steinhauser, radio and TV editor of the Pittsburgh press, wrote in 1953. When I resigned from council to become a judge, read what Dave Lawrence had to say about me. In it, he said, quote, some refer to him as the father of smoke control, and certainly he deserves that distinction. Others think of him as one of the most potent influences for the improvements in the public health program throughout Pennsylvania, and he earned that position in this community also. There are still others who count high among his achievements his work to bring to Pittsburgh the Civic Light Opera. Quote, in spite of the fight that I had with the railroads, and I had a terrific battle with the railroads because they were hauling coal, I got them to go along. When I got elected to council in November of 41, it hurt me to some extent. I came in last, but I got elected. Then I got an invitation to speak before the railroad representatives who used to meet monthly at the Fort Pitt Hotel. The president was Mr. Graham, who was president of the Pittsburgh and West Virginia Railroad, and he was chairman of the Finance Committee of the Republican Party in Allegheny County. I didn't know they were going to print the speech, but they were taking down everything I said, and here's the way I ended the speech after talking about smoke control. Quote, I predict to you that if the people of this city will only cooperate and have patience so that we are able to carry out the program in its various phases in gradual stages, I know that not only are we going to make this a beautiful and healthy city in which to live, but Pittsburgh will also become a better city industrially. And more than all that, when we feel that we have accomplished something so important as all this, the citizens of this community will have acquired a new moral strength that will help make this city, from every point of view, one of the finest in this country in which to live and work. Quote, that was in November 1941. Before there was any Allegheny Conference on Community Development, the Renaissance hadn't started yet. Then Mr. Graham said this, quote, I'm really very glad that Councilman Woke was re-elected to council this month and wish for him continued success in his efforts to eliminate smoke in Pittsburgh. If he is successful in furthering the movement and seeing it through, he will have accomplished for Pittsburgh more than any other individual that I know anything about. I would like to see this movement carried through to the county also. There is no more excuse for smoke in the county than in the city of Pittsburgh, and I hope the county commissioners will take this up someday to get this movement started. Quote, the Allegheny Conference came into being in 1943, but from the point of view of the average person, the Renaissance didn't start until Lawrence became mayor, and that was in January of 46. The first week he became mayor, he called me on the phone to come over and see him about a municipal problem. So we talked in his office, and when I got up to go, he said, sit down, Abe, I want to talk to you, quote. And with tears in his eyes, here's what he said to me, quote, Abe, I've been a politician, no question about it. I was Secretary of the Commonwealth, and after I got out, I was indicted twice before a jury, and I was acquitted. It didn't affect me. I knew I was innocent. But the effect it had on my wife and my children was terrible. Then afterwards, my two sons were killed in an accident. That not only affected my family, it affected me too. I wasn't seeking to run for mayor. They were trying to get somebody else, but finally they shoved it on to me, and I'm telling you, Abe, that I'm going to try to be the best mayor Pittsburgh ever had. I mean that, and I'm going to work with you. Quote. Well, he did become the greatest mayor Pittsburgh ever had. Why? Because he started to cooperate with Richard King Mellon with the Allegheny Conference on Community Development. They didn't do too much at all till he became mayor. Then they started working together. They had a program they were going to submit to the governor to create the Urban Redevelopment Authority, and Richard K. Mellon insisted that Lawrence become the chairman because he knew that Lawrence was a doer. So the Urban Redevelopment Authority was created with Lawrence as chairman, and things started to move physically. One of the first things was Point Park. There were old businesses there, some historical, and people wanted to keep them. Everything that was done had to come before City Council. I had to be the spokesman to take the lead. The first one was the whole area down at the Point. We had a terrible meeting. Council chambers was filled with people who owned or rented property down there who were opposed to it. I pleaded with them, and fortunately I knew quite a few of them. Many of them were Jews whom I knew. After the meeting, I talked to them and told them not to worry, that they would be treated fairly. The thing went through and there was no litigation. We got Point Park without any real litigation. Then the buildings went up there by Equitable. But none of it would have come if it had not been started by smoke control. Now let me tell you another thing about pollution. Besides smoke control in the city, I was pleading, smoke knows no geographical boundary lines. It can come in from outside. The only serious one we had at the time inside the city was Jones and Laughlin. That was iron ore dust. When Admiral Morrill came in, he said later on he was going to do something about it. But Ann Alpern helped me in drafting the ordinance. We drafted it together. She was city solicitor. She worked with me, and we've always been very close friends. She is a very able judge, a very able woman. We came to the conclusion that if we wanted to fight it, we could fight it on the basis of a nuisance under the common law without a special ordinance. But that's beside the point. When Lawrence was mayor, the 9 councilmen had meetings with him, and I would be pleading that the rivers needed to be cleaned up also. Mine acid was pouring into the rivers all the time. At that time, Lawrence said we were asking the governor for so many things, and the conference already had 10 things. He didn't want to add another thing to it. That's one thing I didn't accomplish, but I foresaw it. Mr. Walters asks, do you feel that during the Renaissance, City Council played a leadership role? And Mr. Wolk replies, City Council was wonderful. They cooperated fully with the mayor. But I was the only one that was taking the lead in different things. But they supported all these projects that had to come before City Council. For instance, the University of Pittsburgh, when they were taking the land out there, had to come before City Council. The Southside, Hazelwood, all these things had to come before City Council. And City Council was very, very cooperative. And they deserve credit because naturally these things couldn't have gone through without City Council. So City Council deserves credit, although they didn't initiate any of these things. They all came from Allegheny Conference. And you've got to give credit to Edgar Kaufman. Here he had his store up here, yet he was strongly in favor of the development of Point Park, which would have helped Horns. Lawrence cooperated not only with Richard King Mellon, but with the business leaders, all Republicans. When Lawrence became mayor, he became a statesman politician. When I became judge and had to be inducted, Fred Weir, who used to sit next to me on council, made the induction speech. This was in 56. In that speech, he said that smoke control was the greatest of my accomplishments, and he said, quote, had it not been for him, that ordinance would not have been passed in 1941. War came and it was not possible to enforce the ordinance, but in 1947, when I myself was present in council, I saw him in action. And again, there were many cogent reasons why enforcement should be postponed. Let me say, too, that it was very dangerous politically, but Abe Wolk said we had got to do this now or it may never get done, but it got done. And of course, I hardly need to say that if that had not occurred, there is no chance that we would have had the Gateway Center, no chance that we would have had these parks and all this other dramatic redevelopment that you now see here taking place. Quote, I'd like to explain something else that happened in 1941 that was very important. City Council and the mayor wanted to borrow $2.5 million on a bond issue, and I argued that while the things that the bond issue was for might be worthwhile, it was unfair while the government, because of the war effort, was trying to sell war bonds. We would have been competing with the government. So I suggested cutting it down as low as we could. So I worked and got them to cut it down and down and down. And finally I got it down to $750,000. I was an expert in finance for the city, but there was one thing I didn't know. I knew we got bond reports all the time, and I saw that we had balances from way back in the 20s. That's the time I got David Kurtzman to assign me a man to go over it very carefully, and whatever the figure was, $750,000 or $1 million, we found we had the money in the bank. So I went to council and said we could do the things without borrowing any money or selling bonds. Now to talk about another matter. Dr. Alexander was director of health in the city of Pittsburgh. He used to watch what I would say, then he'd jump on the bandwagon. For instance, take syphilis control. A way back, Dr. Thomas Perrin, P-A-R-R-A-N, Surgeon General of the United States, was trying to get something done on it. Locally, it wasn't going to pass council till I made a terrific battle, and it passed. I was given credit in the bulletin index, but I wasn't the starter of it. Now, I don't know what's happened in all these last 25 years. Now they're talking how bad the syphilis control is. I thought we had started something. Another thing was weed control. I was against hay fever. I got the kids in the summertime to cut the weeds. I couldn't do it on private property, but I got them to cut around the parks and all the property that the city owned. But ragweed could flow in, so I wanted it countyside. I don't know whether they're doing anything about it at all since I left. I was always interested in public health of every kind, whether it was hay fever or anything else. Mr. Walters asks, do you think the Renaissance is over? Mr. Woke says, I don't know. The Allegheny Conference doesn't have the cooperation of the mayor. City Council is quarreling with the mayor. There's no more of that harmony that existed when Lawrence was mayor with all the leaders of the community. I'll tell you something that I feel very strong about because it was one of my main objections. I was responsible for fighting through to have a county department of health. I think my final brochure on it was after the war, though I started working on it in 1943 and prepared many brochures. And I had meetings with the dean of the medical school, Dr. McElroy. That's M-C, capital E-L-R-O-Y. And he said I was talking like Dean Huggins, H-U-G-G-I-N-S, had talked years before about a school of public health. And he said maybe a layman could do it where a doctor couldn't. Now there was a meeting of the Pennsylvania Medical Society in Pittsburgh at the William Penn Hotel, and I read in the paper that a Dr. F. Lucchesi, that's L-U-C-H-E-S-I, had said that public health in Pennsylvania had received very little serious attention. And when I inquired about getting a copy of the speech from the public relations man who was from Harrisburg, this gentleman asked me why, as a layman, I was so interested. I told him about my activity for a school of public health at the University of Pittsburgh. There was a man sitting at a table whom I didn't know. He was a reporter of the Pittsburgh Sun-Telegraph. He had overheard the conversation. He was so impressed, he asked me for my brochure to write a story. I told him I wanted no publicity on the subject. Publicity would hurt my chances of achieving my goal. He finally agreed not to write a story, but asked me to give him a copy of the brochure merely to get the impression it made on his superiors. 2 days later, he told me if I would read the brochure in City Council on Monday, the Sun-Telegraph would write 8 articles on the bad conditions of public health in Pennsylvania, the first article to be on my proposal. I felt I could not refuse this proposition. It did result in Governor Duff asking the American Public Health Association to make an analysis for him of public health in Pennsylvania. I had stated to City Council that public health and the prevention of disease should be a prime objective of every community, and that it was appalling how little the 129 municipalities in Allegheny County were doing toward that objective. I further stated that the governmental area to achieve this objective should be at least the geographical limits of the county. This I did accomplish. I did finally obtain state legislation permitting county public health departments, and Allegheny became the county health department for this area. I further stated that you can't separate industrial medicine from public health generally because 90% of the problems that affect human beings that work around this area don't come from the plants they work in, but from outside of the plants. Another thing that council had to do was to set up the auditorium authority after vacating all that land. Jack Robin was very active in that regard. I started the Civic Light Opera. I sold it to Edgar Kaufman, and I got from him a pledge of $1 million to hold a summer theater. I conceived the idea of the movable roof, and I always liked the idea of having it open so that it could be held in the open air in the summer. Now they've gone down to Heinz Hall, but I would prefer to have it in the open air. But when the arena was first built, The first year, people would come to sit in the open air. There was a problem with the wind, but there were supposed to have been three buildings built to prevent that wind effect. So because of the wind possibility, William Y. Metal and Mr. Hume, the president of Civic Light Opera, they would open the roof for only a short period. The first year, the Civic Light Opera had no financial problems at the arena, but then in later years, when they didn't open the roof, the attendance kept dropping off. I even went and got $25,000 from the city and $25,000 from the county to help them each year. It couldn't be given directly to the Light Opera, but it was given to the Auditorium Authority to reduce their rent. Well, there was another story about the School of Public Health that I didn't tell you. Before I went to the Mellons, I went to Dr. Thomas Perrin in Washington and said it would be very helpful if we could get a little federal money toward a School of Public Health first. He wrote back that there was a bill before Congress that would permit money to be given to universities, but that it wasn't out of committee. Unfortunately, the bill died. I was very friendly with Gilbert Love, a reporter on the Pittsburgh Press. He had worked with me on the smoke control program. I phoned him after I had prepared the first brochure on a school for public health, and I asked him to have lunch with me to discuss the proposal, but without any publicity. About 3 weeks later, he phoned me and said it was a marvelous proposition, but he had no suggestions to make because it involved millions of dollars. Sometime later, he phoned me and he said he had given the brochure to a very responsible source, but he couldn't divulge the name. I didn't learn from Mr. Love until after the A.W. Mellon Educational and Charitable Trust had announced its gift that the, quote, responsible source, quote, that Mr. Love gave my brochure to was Ed Leach, publisher of the Pittsburgh Press. Adolph W. Schmidt, president of the A.W. Mellon Educational and Charitable Trust, had asked the newspapers for suggestions as to how to spend a part of the foundation's money. Mr. Leach called to his office Gilbert Love and others connected with the Pittsburgh Press and asked for suggestions. Mr. Love said, quote, I have something ready-made, quote. He went to his filing cabinet and gave Mr. Leach my brochure, and Mr. Leach then suggested to Mr. Schmidt the establishment of a school of public health. I periodically received the report of the A.W. Mellon Educational and Charitable Trust, and if I didn't read it immediately, I laid it on my desk. One day, I picked the report up and saw that the trust had $32 million to spend. I called Adolph Schmidt on the phone and made an appointment with him and spent 2.5 hours discussing my proposal for a school of public health. Thus, Mr. Schmidt had my proposal not only from me, but from Mr. Leach. In the meantime, Mr. Broughton, B-R-O-U-G-H-T-O-N, consultant for the A.W. Mellon Educational and Charitable Trust, was very much interested in the A-B-C ordinance. In council one day, talking about smoke, I handed up a copy of an article in the Woman's Home Companion entitled, quote, Disease a la carte, quote, which talked about how disease is created in restaurants that are not clean. Dr. Alexander used to watch everything I did, so sometime later he brought in an ABC ordinance for restaurant cleanliness control. Well, the consultant for the Mellon Foundation at a big meeting about the ABC ordinance, where there was opposition to it, said he wanted to talk to me in my office. There he told me that Mr. Schmidt had given him a number of things to spend the foundation's money on, and one of them was mine on the public health school. They had narrowed their interest down to three projects, and mine was one of them. I was the chairman of the Freedom Train Committee in 1948 in this area, and I was so tired after the 8-day celebration that I went to Ligonier for a few days' rest. While there, the third day, I picked up a Pittsburgh newspaper which announced the $13,600,000 gift of the A.W. Mellon Educational and Charitable Trust for a graduate school of public health at the University of Pittsburgh. When I got home, I found a note on my desk to call Adolph Schmidt. I did, and he informed me he wanted me to know the gift before he gave the story to the newspapers. Subsequently, I obtained from the city of Pittsburgh the municipal hospital so that the Graduate School of Public Health could be started. I founded the Arts and Crafts Center, and I persuaded the Garden Center to move to Mellon Park. They used to meet out at the shelter house in Shenley Park, a terrible place for them to meet. I went to Mrs. Gus Oliver, who was a wonderful woman, and suggested that for about $25,000, the garage from the Mellon Estate in Mellon Park could be made into a beautiful headquarters for a garden center. Then later I spoke before the board of the Garden Federation, and they agreed to it. They moved out there, and not only did they raise $25,000, but one woman gave $75,000 for the auditorium alone, and it's the finest garden center in the country. Now for the Arts and Crafts Center next to the Garden Center. K.F. Rafferty, R-A-F-F-E-R-T-Y, met me in the elevator of the Burger Building one day and said he could sell the Marshall property at 5th and Shady to an institute for $25,000. That Marshall house was assessed at $85,000 and was a gorgeous building right next to the Mellon Estate. I wasn't too enthusiastic, but I would have helped him. I never heard any more from him about it. Then when I met him again one day in the elevator, he told me that deal had fallen through, and I told him I had another suggestion. Why not sell it to the Mellons to complete the park to Shady Avenue, especially since the Scaife home was right up above it on Shady? So he talked to Mrs. Marshall, who was widowed and lived in Pottstown, and he reported that they wouldn't do that, that the Marshalls were too close to the Mellons. So then I suggested to him that if the Marshalls would give it to the city of Pittsburgh, they would make more than the $25,000 in the reduction of income taxes. So he got in touch with Mrs. Marshall, and she agreed to do it. So the next day I gave the story to the newspaper, stating that the Marshall home be used for the purposes it is now being used for. Then Dr. Daugherty...